If you're living in one of these countries where the mainstream media is waking up to the problems of growing national debt, think about figuring out how you're going to get out of there in the event that things get really, really ugly.
So yeah, if you're a UK citizen, you'll be looking at this thinking, hang on, you know, we've got the same sort of statistics as third world countries now. This is a really big problem.
Bitcoin, self-custody, that's your only play. There's nothing else. Not real estate, it's not gold, it's nothing else. Because all these other elements are still connected to these thieves that manipulate and can steal it from you.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. I have Rick and Tony with me. Guys, let's jump right into the news. We have up first. We are finally seeing in the UK that the mainstream press is beginning to admit the colossal national debt problem and that the interest or coupon payments on that debt are a bit of an issue as well. I think it's striking to me that they're just picking up on this story. I mean, the national debt problem everywhere, particularly in the West, is massive. Rick, as someone who is trying to escape the UK actively, I would love to hear your take on this first.
Yeah, it's astonishing, isn't it? And I suppose your point is right. What's the most astonishing thing about this is how widely misunderstood, or not even misunderstood, people just don't know. They don't have any sort of sense of how money works. They don't realize how indebted we are. There was something actually, if you read that thread by that guy, that was interesting, is that he shared a post from Peter McCormack, I think back in February this year, where Peter McCormack was on like a train or a tube station, you know, a tube train or something in London. And he took a picture of one of the adverts in the tube. And it was actually like trying to raise money, or it was a petition to support Africa. And the reasoning that they used is that Africa is spending, you know, whatever nation they were talking about is spending more on debt repayments than they are on education. And what's crazy is that that's actually true in the UK. So think of that, right? Like, we have adverts in our trains that tell you, oh, it's so terrible in Africa, guys. Like, they spend more on debt than they do on education, when the same is true here. And it just goes to show you how much trouble the UK is in. And to your point as well, Michael, it's not just the UK. You know, debt is a massive problem all over the world now. And like you say, the stuff that's coming in the UK is pretty scary. You've probably seen that guy with the shaved head who keeps talking about wealth taxes. He kind of blew up on social media. So now they're pushing for wealth taxes, even though, you know, even if you do tax all the billionaires in the UK, you'll only raise about 15 days worth of the government's expenditure. So it's no solution. So I think what this should tell you, if you're in the UK, is look, standards are going to get worse. The debt is going to go absolutely crazy, and we're either going to head towards hyperinflation or some next level austerity that no one's ever really witnessed before. And to try and, you know, delay the inevitable as much as they can, the government's best solution is to try and steal your money because they've run out. So yeah, if you're a UK citizen, you'll be looking at this thinking, hang on, you know, we've got the same sort of statistics as third world countries now. This is a really big problem. And if you're wealthy and successful and you work hard and you know your government's going to try and balance the books by ripping your wealth away from you, then inevitably you're going to try and leave the UK. And we're seeing that now in droves. Like, the amount of millionaires that left the UK in the last 12 months is massive. And that hemorrhage will continue to happen. So yeah, hey, look, I'm quite lucky, right? Just very lucky. I have dual nationality. So I do have an EU passport as well. So at some point, I'll be trying to escape. But the thing is, escape to the UK, out of the frying pan and into the fire, right? They've got very similar problems on the continent as well. So, yeah, you know, look, we say it every week, right? But like, you've got it. First of all, if the government's going to try and steal your money, kind of makes sense to put it in self-custody where they can't reach it, right? Don't leave it on an exchange if it's Bitcoin. Don't keep cash in the bank, all of those things. And if you can, start exploring other options, like what governments are going to treat you best? What parts of the world are you going to actually be able to build a future and not have all everything debased and everything stolen from you? So crazy situation in the UK, but luckily I know there's a man on this podcast with us today that might have some solutions.
Yeah, Tony, I'd obviously love to let you comment on anything you'd like to, but I feel like you've got some really good practical takeaways for how people address the concerns that are the fact that the mainstream media in the United Kingdom is actually bringing this topic to people's attention now, to me, says it all, like just how dire it is. So feel free to comment, but also, what do you do about it personally?
Yeah, it's horrific, man. The scenario that I've been warning about, you know, for the last 2 years, you know, seems to have come. We're at the end of this, and where things are really like, if the mainstream media, those that are known for lying and concocting and fabricating and twisting things around, are actually admitting the truth, that's when you know you're finished, right? Like, that's when you know things are really, really bad. Unfortunately, most people don't understand anything, which is, you know, fundamentally like a big source of this problem. The general population are like one-trick ponies. You know, everybody specializes in their one little thing that their job is, you know, surrounded with. But besides that, they don't know anything. And more importantly, no one understands money. Like, how do we get to this problem? You ask anyone on the street, they'll look at you, you know, with a blank face. That is fundamentally the problem. And all of these governments, they're bankrupt. All of them, every single one of them. So how are they going to fix this problem while remaining in power? They're going to have to steal it from somewhere, right? And so if they print it, they steal it from you. And if they seize your bank account, they steal it from you. So one way or another, the regular citizens are going to get their savings completely like removed. And it's a terrible place to be. I've lived it. When you wake up one day with literally nothing to your name, like I can't, like, I can talk to you about this for weeks. You still wouldn't understand what a terrifying, you know, spine-chilling feeling that is, to literally know you have nothing at your disposal. And so that usually translates into massive violence. Like, I mean, the life in Beirut when all hell broke loose was like the zombie apocalypse, think of like your most horrific video game on like extreme mode. That's what it was like. And so when this starts happening in real life everywhere, like in big cities, like how do you deal with this? That's why a lot of millionaires are leaving the UK. They're jumping ship because they see the storm that's coming. But what about the poor folks that can't jump ship? What happens to them? Are they worthless? Do they mean nothing? Is their value, is their life not valuable in any way? It's not right? So how do we deal with all of these people? Unfortunately, I don't have an answer, but you know, there are options, there are solutions for those that still have some wiggle room time. If your money's in a bank, get it out of the bank. You know, like, the system is falling apart. It's crystal clear. You can't put it anywhere else that's still tied to the old system. You have to move into somewhere they can't reach you. Bitcoin, self-custody, that's your only play. There's nothing else. It's not real estate. It's not gold. It's nothing else. Because all these other elements are still connected to these thieves that manipulate and can steal it from you. Bitcoin, 12 words, in your head, done, forever. And if you have the means, there are other countries, other cities, other jurisdictions that are much nicer and don't have any of these problems on a daily basis. Why are you not looking at them, or at least considering them, or at least actively looking for ways to get to them? You know, whenever there's a will, there's a way. You can't possibly be in a worse position than I was in 5-6 years ago with $70 to your name. And somehow, by some miracle, I managed to get back up on my feet. Most people right now are still not in that same situation. So you've got a luxury of options that I didn't have at my disposal. There's really no excuse not to take advantage of this. Otherwise, I'm not sure how most folks are going to deal with what's coming, because I can promise you there's no training out there that prepares you for this. So on a positive note, man, if you're still lingering, wondering, complaining, that serves nothing. Do something about it. If you have questions, come and ask. There are people that are ready, willing, and able to help you in many, many ways.
Yeah. I think the more you go through the thought exercise of what this could look like and the implications, the fallout, the more evident it becomes just how important Bitcoin and self-custody is, optionality. And like, Tony, I know you and I differ in our approach. Like, you're like the ultimate digital nomad, and I'm, you know, acquiring firearms and ammunition and trying to grow my own food and, you know, a lot of that stuff. But I think it's having that awareness, but most importantly is, unless you're producing something that people want to trade with, trade for, you need to have some sort of way of exchanging value. And if you have, even if you have Bitcoin, if it's on an exchange, if it's at a, you know, in a collaborative custody arrangement where an app can be shut down or a company can be shut down, or with a multi-custodian solution where everyone can be shut down and they just say, sorry, you can't do that anymore. And God knows they'd comply. Your options are gone in those situations. And so when you play out, like, how might this really manifest itself in a worst case scenario or even just a near worst case scenario? The only option is you having full custody of your wealth. And there are downsides to everything, right? There's no free lunch, but it's completely possible. I mean, hell, we've got people in their 80s who are custodying their own Bitcoin, running their own node. So if they can do it, whoever, if you're listening to this show, like, you can do it, right? If you can log into YouTube and pay attention to what we're talking about. But I think you raise a lot of good points. And I think even though my tendency is to lean toward not go down with the fiat ship, but go down with the, you know, wherever I am ship, I guess, to some degree, and hunker in and load up on weapons. I still think that people need to consider that second option. Like, what if I really do need to get out? And, you know, when the time comes, it's too late, right? I mean, you're not making that decision in real time. You have to make that in advance. So I think that's really well said. Any other comments on this before we jump into the rest of the news?
No, that's it, man. Just to stop living in the illusion that this cannot happen where you are or to you for whatever reason that you concoct in your head. That is just something that lives in your head. That is not the truth. Yeah. Truth is, this is coming everywhere, whether you like it or not, whether you live in a penthouse or on the street. No one is shielded from complete bankruptcy and lunacy. Yeah.
And I'm sure Rome felt like they were completely insulated from all of the chaos. And here we are a couple thousand years later talking about them. Alrighty, up next, we've got EconoAlchemist, one of my favorite Bitcoiners, made the comment that, so Peter Schiff has been, I think, just kind of trolling, but talking about Bitcoin. He's going to, you know, moving onto a hardware wallet, and he put out an address for people to send gifts, Bitcoin gifts to him. And EconoAlchemist said, this guy's been shitting on Bitcoin for years, and the Samurai devs have been under arrest for over 330 days now, and we're not proactively, you know, coming to the cause of the people who actually have had meaningful impact in our world, in our community. I saw this and I was like redeploying some sats to the Samurai Defense Fund. It's crazy. Like, what is wrong with Bitcoiners? Like, why are we sending anything to Peter Schiff? What, Rick, I'll let you take it first, man.
Yeah, it's crazy. I share the same sentiment as EconoAlchemist. It's so disappointing to see, you know. I also get disappointed when we go to, you know, conferences or any sort of Bitcoin adjacent sort of talks and public events. It's deafening, the silence around the Samurai case. It really is, you know. And I think what's happening is people feel like they can't touch it or they can't talk about it because they're scared of it, right? They feel like, oh, I'll be associated with criminals. I mean, clearly they're not criminals. If you understand the case and you know what they built, you know, they're getting charged with anti-money laundering and all sorts of stuff, despite never touching anybody's money. That's just not how the technology works that they built. And when you see such a lack of support, or I mean, look, there is quite a lot of support for Samurai, but it comes from a very tight-knit group who are very, very passionate. But the wider community, you know, look, I'll say it, right? my personal thoughts are when you've got people like Michael Saylor floating around with, you know, 2.5% supply of the Bitcoin supply, and you've got these huge companies now, like enormous companies making a hell of a lot of money, you know, purveying whatever services they will. I just would love to see maybe even more corporate support of the guy, the samurai devs, because, you know, it's that old saying, you know, first they came for so-and-so, but it wasn't me, so I don't care. Then they came for the next guy, but it wasn't me, so I didn't say anything. And then eventually they come for you. You know, all these guys are guilty of is building some very, very good software. And then to see that actually the amount of money raised towards Peter Schiff is so large, just makes you think sometimes maybe the community's lost its way a little bit. I mean, you know, we had some comments on our own Twitter this week just saying, you know, oh, don't worry about KYC, right? Like, privacy has no value. And you know, we've moved a long, long way from the days where samurai were around. And I think a lot of these people don't realize that some of the best features in Bitcoin wallets and things like that, they all started life in Samurai Wallet, right? They really did make a huge impact on the ecosystem. And these guys making lots of money selling whatever services, they owe some respect to the guys who were there building this tech out. So yeah, I mean, why on earth you'd send Peter Schiff any Bitcoin and not support the Samurai Defense Fund? I think that's just absolutely crazy. And I'd really implore anybody listening to the show today, like, look, if you can spare $5, $10, go and donate it to the Samurai Defense Fund, right? They'll really appreciate it. You'll be supporting a good cause. And Peter Schiff's got plenty of money. Or, well, maybe thinks he does in Fort Knox and there's nothing in there, but that's another story for another time, right? But yeah, let's not forget Samurai. Let's make sure we always mention them when we can.
Yeah, Rick, I think I have a feeling you'd agree with this. I think what maybe we've lost. So I'll just say I've been very fortunate. I've only been in Bitcoin a couple of years. I'm very fortunate that I stumbled into you all as a client before I joined the team. And I think my thinking on a lot of these sorts of topics has been shaped by engaging with people who have been around the block a time or two. My sense is that we have a lot more people now in Bitcoin with large megaphones who came in more recently, maybe not as recently as I did, but kind of missed the block size wars, didn't understand what it was like to hold when like governments were just completely shitting on you and all of the FUD. I mean, not just the, you know, mainstream FUD that we hear today, but like you're a criminal if you're using Bitcoin kind of FUD. And so those voices that are amplified now are more traditional finance, more number go up, like all the stuff we kind of talk about. And I understand that all those are exciting topics. So I'm not, you know, disparaging anyone in particular, but I think we've really, really lost sight of like the cypherpunk movement that existed within Bitcoin in favor of all of these other really just sort of noise versus signal talking
the guys
points.
In so, suits showed up, right? They're all finance guys and they're here because they think they can make money and they don't care about privacy. They don't I'm not sure they fully understand the technology based on some of the comments they make, which, you know, when you pass them, there's a lot of inaccuracy and nonsense in it. Look, here's my proposition. I would bet that a lot of people today involved in Bitcoin, if you gave them a choice, right, totally hypothetical, but if you said to them, your Bitcoin could be worth $1 million per coin today, but you have to give up all your privacy and you're not allowed to self-custody your Bitcoin. You have to leave it with a Bitcoin bank. I think a worryingly large amount of Bitcoiners would push that button and give up any sense of freedom, any sense of privacy, just to get wealthy. And it shows that they never learned what the problem was in the first place that Satoshi was trying to solve. And they are miles away from understanding the solution. So yeah, I mean, it was inevitable. Like, you know, people accuse us of complaining or whatever. This dilution of that sort of ethos is inevitable. We're like those guys who say like, oh yeah, I like that band before it was cool, right? Like, you know, you don't want to do too much of that. But that's what I think is happening here. So, you know, and it leaves people like Samurai on the, you know, everybody's getting rich while the guys who helped build this thing are rotting in, well, I mean, they're under house arrest, but you get the point. So disappointing. Let's all support them.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Hopefully we can remember to tell our editor to throw up a QR code or something to go link to that page and give people a way to donate. Tony, I'm sure you have some thoughts on sending Bitcoin to Peter Schiff.
No, man, nothing further to add to what you guys have said. It's really disgusting to see this play out. I mean, it's true. Most people coming into Bitcoin now haven't come in, like they don't know any of the history, you know, that they really had the hard times of Bitcoin in the past 16 years. Like most people have no idea about it, and they don't spend 2 seconds even, you know, reading up about it or learning to see what happened. They just come in on the excitement now. It's a new kid on the block now, Bitcoin, that's going to make them rich, right? But rich in what? As far as they know, it's rich in dollars. So they were dumb back then, and they're still dumb now, you know, just hoping to be more dumb with more worthless money. That's the reality. And like if they're simping for people like grumpy old men like Peter Schiff, you know, like that's what I keep telling you, man. The human IQ level is so low. It's terrifying for me. It's like it's funny, but it's not funny. It's almost like, you know, like who cares about Peter Schiff? Like who cares about any of these guys? You know, like worry about yourself. They're simping for Peter Schiff as if they get him into Bitcoin, it's somehow going to change everything about Bitcoin, and Bitcoin's going to become worth $100 million because Mr. fucking Schiff is in Bitcoin now. No one gives a shit about him. If he believes in his gold, let him go to bed with his gold till the end of time. Like who cares? Right? It's like you're chasing a partner or someone that doesn't give a damn about you, and you're trying to woo them with all sorts of glamorous gifts while they still shit on you. This is what I see, right? It's like, imagine you're chasing back after an ex who lied or cheated on you, and you're trying to win her back, you know, by giving her all these gifts and promises and all that. It's the same shit. It doesn't work. It makes you look like a moron. So instead of, you know, passing on the funds to someone who really needs it, like Samurai or other causes globally that are actually, you know, can actually use the funds for something constructive, you're wasting your time and energy, all fun and games, on some loser that doesn't deserve half a second of your attention. So, but people are the way they are, right? I mean, if you have an IQ of a flea, you're going to act like one. So that's why we're very, very early to all of this. So whoever thinks, you know, you're late to Bitcoin, just look at the world around you. Look at the people. Just look how people behave, and you'll understand that you're still prehistoric dinosaur early to anything constructive still in Bitcoin.
Yeah. I'll just wrap up with one more thought. I don't know if this will seem cohesive with the topic or not, but in my mind it is. And that is, you know, the importance of what came before, like what the Samurai guys did and what a lot of other builders in the early days of Bitcoin did. I think they were building on a much better understanding of like the reality that we face and why the principles of Bitcoin are so important. And I know people talk about like, oh, the Bitcoin rabbit hole just is endless and everything. My sense is a lot of people who are talking about Bitcoin, the rabbit hole's kind of ended for them. It's really like, it's like the roots have stopped and they just want to talk about number go up. And like they figured out how to game the algorithm on X or whatever. And they, you know, get a ton of followers for it. But, you know, for me, like my personal experience, and hell, you guys know this, we talked before we hit record on Banter, all the rabbit holes were going down and like these crazy topics. Like if you think you've been lied to about how money works, you're right. But if you think that you've like reached the depth of the lie, like the historical lies we've been told, like you're wrong. And so if you feel like you're kind of coming to the end of that, it's time to like dig deeper. And then I think these situations like the Free Samurai, you know, cause and many others, Tony, that you're alluding to, you suddenly have like a clearer vision as to why they're so important. But if you kind of stop and it's like, I'm just waiting for when's the big pump going to happen? You're going to lose sight of it, and you're going to send sats to, you know, some idiot who's been bashing Bitcoin for almost a decade. So anyway, I'll get off my soapbox. We've got one more story we want to cover. So Tony, I'm going to let you take this one first, but because I think there's context, but Daniel Prince, who I love, I think we all respect, he tweeted the number of reachable Bitcoin nodes at a little over 21,000. And, you know, I think he raises a good point. It's a pathetic number. However, there's a lot of nuance to this. Tony, why don't you explain what's maybe missed in that number? And I think it's significant, but I want to circle back to like, what's the takeaway? What is the signal in this tweet that he's sharing?
Yeah, no, he's absolutely right. The number is pathetic. Running a node is extremely important. Every single Bitcoiner should be running one. One, it's not expensive. And two, it's definitely not hard. And three, it requires little to no work on your behalf once it's up and running. Running a node, you know, like exponentially adds to the whole decentralization and strength of the entire Bitcoin network. So it's a net positive to everybody, not just you. But the number that he's seeing on screen, these are like, I believe, the reachable nodes. But in reality, there's a much higher number than that are actually online. You just, you know, you can't see them. But even with that, I mean, I suspect the numbers may be around like 100,000, maybe give or take around there. Even though it is higher than that 21K that he's seeing, it's nowhere near where it should be. I mean, this should be like in the millions, right? Like, I mean, everyone out there that has any sort of interest in Bitcoin should be plugging one in. Just like, you know, the excitement these days around solo mining. Plug in a solo miner, plug in a node. Game over. That's it. You know, it's everybody wins. I mean, your rules, your node, that's how it's supposed to be. So I don't know if there's a way to really track the exact number that's out there, but as far as we're concerned at the Bitcoin Way, almost every single person we talk to has a node up and running, you know, within the first week.
Yeah, I think this is an important, and I guess my encouragement to people would be, we aren't the number go up maxis, but you have a financial interest in Bitcoin. And you have a financial interest in Bitcoin remaining structurally as it is today, not just however the government defines Bitcoin or however BlackRock defines Bitcoin, right? And the node is your vote. So when inevitably, in my view, it is attempted to be co-opted by someone, you get to just opt out. Like that's your get out of jail free card. Like I'm not going to change the code. I'm not going to make some stupid update that, you know, inflates the supply of Bitcoin is an extreme and silly example perhaps. But yeah, Tony, I couldn't agree more. Everyone needs to run a node. It's a very, very small price to pay for the freedom and liberation that Bitcoin promises the world if we stay focused on what's important. Rick, I'll hand it to you. I think maybe you got some numbers or something that might give a little more context.
Yeah, it's really interesting. First of all, a shout out to Princey, right? Like he's one of my favorite Bitcoiners. He's got a really great podcast. And, you know, he knows what he's talking about. Like he's been around a long while, always gives like decent content and insights. You know, I think it's fair to say maybe this one was like a little bit off the mark because of the sort of difference between reachable and unreachable nodes. So, you know, people are kind of getting caught up on debating whether this is exactly the right number. But look, if you go and look at Luke Dashier has a website you can visit where he tracks reachable and unreachable nodes. Don't ask me exactly how he configures that or how he tracks those numbers, but according to his research, we're closer to sort of 90,000 if you combine reachable and unreachable nodes. Which, you know, I think goes back to Daniel's point, you know, whether the number is bang on the money or not, it's a surprisingly small number given the size and importance of Bitcoin's network and how much value it is stored within it, right? But yeah, no, it's funny that he would tweet that this week because our newsletter last week that I wrote was all about just how early you might be to Bitcoin, right? Everyone wants to know that. Am I early? Am I late? And I think is, you know, you look at this number, this big 87 or whatever price we're at today, right? It's an awful lot of money. That's more than the average salary in the US, probably more than your car is worth and all this sort of stuff. So people look at that price and go, oh man, I've definitely missed the boat, right? Like I'm definitely late to this because all these other guys were buying it for $500 or whatever, you know, 10 years ago. But the truth is when you look at numbers like this, well, I'll take you through a few that were in this newsletter that we put together, right? So there was a report by River Financial, the exchange, and they estimate that about 328 million people worldwide own some Bitcoin in some format, right? Whether that's through an ETF, on an exchange, in self-custody, but the total ownership is 328 million, which is about 4% of the world population, right? So even if you own any Bitcoin, you're pretty damn early, right? You're in the first 5%. if you dig a little deeper, this is where things start getting really fascinating, right? Because I then thought, well, I wonder how many of these people would actually be in self-custody. So one way I tried to get some sort of directional view on that was go and look at the total UTXO set of Bitcoin, which is currently around 170 million. Now, if there's 170 million UTXOs, right, you can derive from that that actually the maximum amount of people who could be in self-custody would be 170 million if they all had one UTXO each, right? They must have at least one. But what do we know? We know that actually most people will have a handful of UTXOs in their wallet. Some people will have hundreds, right? So it's going to be a lot less than 170 million. So I run some, quick numbers on a napkin to see what this would mean, right? So let's assume that if everyone holds three UTXOs on average, then there's maybe only 56 million odd people in self-custody. But if there's an average of 10 UTXOs per person, then we're down to just 17 million people holding Bitcoin in self-custody potentially, which that's absolutely crazy, right? We're talking you're in the top 0.4% of people, probably, if you self-custody your Bitcoin. And then if you layer on this idea of, well, who runs a node, 90,000 out of a population of 8 billion, I'll pull up the number, it's something stupid, right? But if you are in self-custody and you run your own node, you're probably less than 0.001% of the global population. So if that's not early, I don't know what is. But it is a problem that not enough people are running nodes, right? When less than a tenth of a percent run a node, but 4% own Bitcoin, that's a very, very big gap and something we should try and close. And one of the problems, one of the reasons this happens, is because people are now outsourcing their trust, right? So they're leaving their Bitcoin with an exchange, or they're making the mistake of entering some, institutional custody situation where their learning stops, they don't run a node, all they care about is number go up, they don't improve their skills. So here's the good news, right? We'd all like to see that node count way higher. But to finish on a good note, look how easy it is to become an elite Bitcoiner, right? You buy some Bitcoin, you put it in self-custody, you learn how to use an air-gapped wallet, you run a node, and all of a sudden, you're like this rare beast on the planet like no one's ever seen, right? Cruising around like, big baller. Like, that's some cool shit. So, all right, you didn't get it for $500 a coin, but you can get in a hell of a lot earlier than a lot of people, and crucially, actually use it properly. Very few people know how to look after their Bitcoin properly.
Yeah. And there will come a day that even fewer will have that option because it's not scalable to 8 billion people the way that it is to, 90,000 or however many. Guys, I think that's a good place to wrap up. Very important points. And hopefully this, for anyone listening, just sort of reframes the way that you think about approaching Bitcoin. We get our heads screwed on right. We focus on what's important. And I'll give you a quick hint. Peter Schiff is not important to Bitcoin. And the Samurai devs absolutely have been. So quick, final shout to them. If you're listening, appreciate it. Go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We can help you get into proper 100% Bitcoin self-custody, no counterparty risk, no compromises, air-gapped open source Bitcoin only hardware that we recommend. We can also help with online privacy and privacy phones becoming increasingly important in the digital surveillance states that many of us live within. And of course, we have Plan B residency options that Tony alluded to earlier. Very important. If you're living in one of these countries where the mainstream media is waking up to the problems of growing national debt, think about figuring out how you're going to get out of there in the event that things get really, really ugly. Again, that's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Gents, as always, it's an absolute pleasure chatting with you. Look forward to catching up again here in a few days.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Michael.
Cheers.